Board will come to order. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the 1,330th meeting of the Board of Directors. We begin this morning, as at all our meetings, with public comment. I understand we have two speakers this morning. Antonio Thompson, to be followed by Mac Thompson. Is Antonio Thompson here?
Yes, sir.
On forward.
Antonio Thompson. I reside at 6906 Cherry Field Road, Fort Washington, Maryland. I'm an ex-Walmart employee, retired, disability. June 19th. It'll be 10 years since the injury. I'm still dealing with the injury, still being seen by. My issue mainly is because Metro owes me money due to the injury, and I guess it's like a cultural change within the organization. At the time that the injury occurred, it was, I guess it's definitely different than what it is now, but did go through the process of, you know, Department of Employment Services, Office of Workman's Comp, been handling this case pro se. I was successful in winning the claim, but even with court or, well, the administrative hearing judge's orders, Metro had refused to pay. After that 98 injury, I came back to work, and when I was trying to deal with it, this was in May 31st, 2001, was my last day of working, but during that time, it was like they were ordered to pay money, and Metro seemed to be like a disgruntled employer, whereas they tried to have me to pay money back. Anyway, it clashed, two different forces clashing. Since that time, you know, been just dealing with it, and I guess what I'm here to ask you, I only have 2 minutes, and I can go through a lot in 10 years, but just want Metro to pay me. I want someone to look at it, into it. You know, I don't want to be going through it from 10 years from today, you know, trying to come. But if someone would just review the case, look at it, you know, review my concerns, and, you know, with legal, if someone would just look at how much they done spent on legal and just how much time and toll. Well, it's actually taken on me. I was actually a good employee, had commendations and that type of thing. And I just would, you know, like for someone to give me a just shake of what's necessary. Just trying to get along. You know, had a lot of life changes.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson.
Thank you.
We will ask the general manager to look into it and report back to us. Thank you. Next here is Mac Thompson.
Thank you for your time.
Good morning.
You do have a written statement, so I'm just going to talk generally and it'll refer back to it. I was an injured passenger on a Metro bus who hit a red truck, some of us call it a half-ton truck. And let me give it to you just a quick example. You have Metro's policy is that you give them one bill, they cut one check, so you got to go to the hospital, go to the doctors, get treatments, and then you submit your claim. After going to the doctor, submitting a claim, some 5 weeks, Metro, and I gave a demand, you give a demand, and for all practical purposes, $10. The medical expenses were $1. Metro offered me 30 cents. Then on a counter offer, they offered me not one third of the medical bill. On a counter claim, they offered me 35 cents. Still not equal to be the medical expenses. Now, if you don't take that, then you ride it out. If you take it, you can't pay everybody. So on the end, they finally agreed to pay the $1 medical expenses, but no lost wages and no pain and suffering. And that's just insurance industry standards that they do that. Once an insurance company, and the research has been done, all of them, once they accept liability, and pay for the medical, they pay for pain and suffering, life suffering, lost wages. It's been more than 2 months now that I gave a counterclaim to reduce the $10 to $5, more than 2 months, and I haven't heard from Metro yet. Now, I've lost health, lost been injured, lost wages, owed a doctor in collection in the credit bureau. Metro does not respond at timely, and they haven't paid me, won't pay. And I've sent this to the general manager, Mr. Graham, who's my, and I'm D.C. resident, by the way, Columbia Heights.
Your time has expired.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. We'll ask the general manager to look into this.
Well, you got to be.
Very much. No further speakers. All right. The agenda has been provided to members before today. Are there any changes to the agenda? If not, if there's unanimous consent, we'll approve the agenda as presented. Hearing no objection, the agenda is approved. We also have before us the minutes of the April 24th board meeting. Are there any corrections or additions to the minutes of April 24th? None. Is there a motion to accept? Ms. Hewlett moves.
Second.
Mr. Benjamin seconds. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Minutes are accepted. And we come to the report of the Writers Advisory Council. Ms. Iacomini is unfortunately ill this morning. Mr. Pasek is going to deliver her prepared remarks.
It's my pleasure to present you in Ms. Iacomini's place the May Writers Advisory Council report. The RAC has sent you comments on Metro's FY 2009 budget in a separate cover letter earlier this week, so I'll hit some highlights. This year, the RAC wanted to focus not on numbers, but on recommendations that would help address the service concerns raised by riders at last year's fare increase hearings. To that end, the RAC recommends that Metro improve its annual budgeting process to make it smoother, more transparent, and more open for public review. It's not that the RAC thinks that you all are working inside of a little box. It's just that not many people seem to know the process and so cannot offer their comments on the budget easily. The RAC also recommends that Metro assess its need for additional transportation planning or quickly respond to increased ridership and provide updates to routes and schedules. This would go a long way towards answering customer complaints about service reliability. Further, the RAC recommends that Metro work to restore Next Bus service as quickly as possible. Many riders use this service and found it very, very helpful. Lastly, the RAC recommends Metro reconsider its revenue and ridership forecast for FY 2009 in light of continued high gas prices as well as proposed service improvements. This concludes RAC's comments on the budget. At its May meeting, the RAC had two very good presentations from Metro staff, one on the proposed Mystery Rider program and another from Brett Tyler, the director of the Office of Customer Service. Prior to the meeting, there was a great deal of trepidation on the part of RAC members about the Mystery Rider. After a thorough presentation, there was a recognition that this program could be a useful tool for Metro to make improvements in its service and that it will provide a more systemic overview of problems rather than the scattershot view of problems that arise from customer complaints. RAC's hope that the information gathered from the Mystery Rider program will be used in conjunction with information on customer complaints already being compiled by the Office of Customer Service. It is critical for Metro to use all the data that it has available to guide its improvements and policies to benefit all of its customers. Members very much do not want to think that this program, this Mystery Rider program, would supplant customer complaints, but would rather complement them. The program will provide Metro with a significant amount of data. Once this data is received and analyzed, the RAC looks forward to working with Metro staff to develop and implement ways to address the issues identified. RAC also urges Metro to ensure that the information gathered through the Mystery Rider program is available to the public and to all Metro employees. Widely disseminated would increase the public's trust that Metro is aggressively working to identify problems and to develop solutions. RAC members would also like to see the Customer Service Department be able to upgrade their computer and data systems so they can better analyze and disseminate customer complaints to other departments within the organization. RAC still views customer complaints as a sort of first line of contact with the authority. Regarding the Blue Line realignment, the RAC continues to be interested in receiving more information about the proposed realignment of Blue Line service to operate over the Potomac River Bridge. The RAC is curious to know how outreach to riders is being structured and what kind of information is being gathered by staff. Although the RAC continues to ask about this, they have not had any direct interaction with staff except for a global presentation on system capacity in general. RAC understands this change of service would result in trade-offs for passengers and continues to stand ready to be of assistance as this proposal moves. Ms. Iacomini closes her remarks by saying that she really enjoyed Dr. Gridlock's spread in the Sunday Washington Post concerning the new hard flooring options for rail cars. However, she wonders why Metro itself couldn't put something similar on its website and ask. She thinks that it's great that the Post is doing something like this, but that Metro should have the capability and desire to do it for themselves. She said that several of her friends emailed her about their preferences, and she wished their comments to Metro. She's felt the same way about new railcar designs with rearranged seating and other changes. Customers need an easy way to tell Metro what they think. What's easier than posting some of the new cars, hey, you're riding in a new car with different seating. What do you think? Email us at newcar@vermonti.com. BlackBerry's abound in folks who respond. She realizes that soliciting comments has some facets to it, some brighter than others, and understands that it is possible for one disgruntled person to pack an inbox with one type of response, thus skewing the data. But, she says, she would think that our customer service analyst would be able to filter that kind of information out and or allow for it statistically. Sometimes we're hesitant to ask for public feedback, and we shouldn't be. It's like going door to door when you're a candidate for office. It's hard to put yourself out there because you know there will be folks who are negative to you or who don't even want to talk. And then there are others who are interested in what you have to say and who have ideas for you to pursue. Everyone on that block knows that you thought them important enough to reach out to in person. Feedback, both positive and negative, can be used constructively, and that's what's important. The solicitation of feedback also means that you really want to hear something back, and you want to dialogue with the most important folks around, your customers. She thinks Metro needs to be a little bolder and try it, as the old saying said. Maybe you'll learn. Thank you. If you have any questions, I'll answer them this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Pasek. I do have a couple of comments, no questions, but as usual, Ms. Iacomini has a very thoughtful presentation, and clearly the Writers' Council, especially this past month, has gotten into some very substantive areas. I think made a number of useful comments that I'd like to point to, and other members may have comments of their own. But let me say first, we had this lengthy discussion this morning about improving bus service, and a couple of the things that are in the Writers' Council report relate directly to that, in particular that the 30s line service, they were pleased and offered congratulations on that study, but also that they suggest that that this should be considered a model of public engagement as it will use, that we would use as a guideline for further public outreach activities. I thought that tied in with Mr. Hughes' comments this morning in committee when he talked about how they went out to the public and wound up modifying the proposal as a result of that and think they came up with something better. And that clearly was recognized by people who are very much concerned about our process. So I think that's a helpful comment that we may all want to bear in mind. There was also the comment about wishing that we could restore NextBus service. Now, NextBus, of course, is actually a trademark, but I think what people are saying is they'd like real-time information about when the next bus may be arriving. We all share that. As it happens, not something we talked about much this morning, although it might have been part of that conversation. As I understand it, we are trying to work toward the ability to do that in the not-too-distant future. Mr. Cato?
Yes, that is true. The original date that we gave was within 18 months, and I've met with our staff and IT and Suzanne Peck, and we are working towards that. We are building the foundation to ensure that the information, when we do bring it back out, is accurate and provides what our customers need.
Good. We look forward to hearing more about that. There was also comments about the Mystery Rider program that I think are very useful, and I trust that you will be looking closely at those. I believe the answer is mostly in the affirmative anyway. The discussion about this program should not supplant our customer complaint system, and I don't think there's any such intention.
No, none whatsoever. Absolutely.
And the description of kind of integrating this and using that information as well as the new data that you'll get together to try and improve service, I think is exactly what you have in mind.
Absolutely. In fact, they gave us some good input on the specifics of how to do it, but the general intent, we're in the same path.
And then, and finally, there's well, not finally, next to finally. There's some recommendations about the budgeting process, and, you know, we're finishing up this year's, but I hope we will take a look at this before we begin next year's budget process, because I think, you know, this could perhaps lead us to making some more improvements to how we consider our budget, and we should solicit further comment from them before we launch. And since, you know, we're talking about this in May, and that'll be a long time from now, I'm mentioning it now, so hopefully we won't forget, and perhaps around the time, you know, 6 months from now or so, when you're getting ready to present it, might want to go back and kind of look at those comments and see if there isn't something that would be useful for us in next year's budget process. And the final thing, which is also a process related, has to do with the comment that Ms. Giacomini made about flooring. And, you know, I've gotten mostly very positive responses from those who've seen what's being proposed and looked at it. I think that she has a point that it really would be good to be soliciting comments and giving people an opportunity to do that. I know there's naturally trepidation and when you're doing something and, you know, saying, ask the public what they think about it, because, you know, you might hear some stuff you didn't want to hear. But I think that is what we should be doing. And, you know, I think in the long run, we'll benefit from that. That if you're doing something that really is going to be good, more people will be telling you that. And in any case, people need to know that they have an opportunity to have some input and that we're listening.
Yes, sir.
I guess that closes my comments on the Writers' Council report. Did board members have anything they wanted to say or ask with regard to that? All right. Thank you. I have takes us to my report. I have only one thing to mention. Earlier in the year, we had a public comment. Some students from the university, the area universities, who presented to us a proposal for some kind of university student program similar to what other metropolitan areas have, that encourages college students to use the transit system. And they subsequently went to the Writers' Council and spoke there, and they happened to be there when Mr. Cato and I were there, so we had an exchange with them, and I met with them subsequent to that. All of this I've reported to you previously. This past, I guess the week, last week or the week before?
Last week.
It was last week, okay. Mr. Cato and I were invited to speak with the university presidents of the consortium. They have a regular meeting, and they asked us to come to their meeting and kind of discuss this with them. And we had a very productive conversation in which we asked about, you know, about their reactions to a proposal, that we at least start looking into what might be done that would be a win-win, recognizing the constraints on resources that we have. And, you know, I gave my usual speech about Metro doesn't have money, of course. It has to get money from elsewhere. But that there might be benefits to the universities that would, you know, make it worth their while to be part of this. And there was a very good response about the possibilities. We were looking both at what we could do by the way of, you know, fare and the use of smart trip cards, but also some of the potential that Metro might be able to meet some of the needs for transportation that universities are providing themselves. Some of them are running fairly expensive shuttle services, and, you know, it's possible that they will find it advantageous to work with us to see how, you know, our service may be able to provide that for them in a way that might be mutually beneficial. So the conclusion was that it was worth pursuing further, and staff from this agency and the universities are going to be meeting and talking about different possibilities and seeing whether they can bring something forward that would be beneficial both from a regional transportation standpoint and this agency specifically, but also from the universities. Mr. Cato, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, I think you addressed it very well, but you're absolutely right. There is tremendous opportunity and benefit to the universities as well as to this region, and getting students who use public transportation during this point in time in their lives and hopefully to utilize it through the rest of their working lives and during their retirement also. I thought the meeting was very positive. There was a great deal of interest. There's a lot of work to be done, and the staffs will get together and look at how do we make this work, and that's the objective that I think both sides have made, and I'm optimistic that we will bring something back that makes sense. With the understanding that it's not something that, you know, under our compact that we can really have major discounts, but there is a way, I think, creatively that we can make it very to the advantage of students who use public transit as they continue their education.
Thank you, Scale. Any questions? All right. First item of business, after much search, the board's committee recently came back with a recommendation on filling the vacant board secretary position, and I'd recognize Mr. Benjamin.
With great pleasure, I move the appointment of Ms. Loida Sequeira as the board secretary effective June 30th of this year.
Motion, is there a second?
Second, Mr. Chair.
Seconded. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Ayes have it. Motion carries. Congratulations. Next item is the report.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Hudgens.
As we move forward from that item, we've had the opportunity to have Leanda Chambliss be acting for a great deal of time on several occasions. And I think it would be, as the beginning of our public acknowledgement of the work that she's done, to thank her for the work that she's done and show our appreciation for her giving us such long, dedicated time in this position as we've worked through this process.
Well said. Ms. Hewlett?
I couldn't agree more. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Chambliss has done a fantastic job, and especially under trying circumstances there with tremendous turnover, and the board was very, very appreciative, myself included, but all of us were very appreciative of your service, and we think that warrants a public thank you and praise for your service.
Mr. Solomon.
Yes, I want to chime in on that note as well. I've called my secretary has called Ms. Chambliss many times, and she's always been prompt in responding and getting us the right answers and putting us in touch with the people that we needed to do our job on behalf of the board and the authorities. Hope that you're going to be around and continue in some capacity with this board and capacity that you can, because we really appreciate.
I guess I want to echo the same remarks. I think it's exceptionally difficult at any time to be in an acting role, and to be in an acting role for a longer period of time is even more difficult, and we made it as difficult as we could possibly make it for you, and you did an excellent job. We really appreciate what you've done, and look forward to continuing to work with you in your original role, but we will always look fondly at the effort you put in and the dedication you put in carrying out your acting role superbly.
Mr. Munley.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be very brief. Leanda, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thanks.
I had thought to make my comments on this at the next meeting, but I guess there's no time like the present. I've had more occasion being chair since, you know, this year than most of you, I think, to lean on and make life difficult for. Ms. Chambliss, so, you know, let me particularly say thank you for everything that you have been doing, most of the time shorthanded, really, to make things move as smoothly as they can, and also to thank you for what I know you will continue to do. It is a pleasure working with you, and I look forward to continuing to do so. Thank you very much. And that concludes my part of the program. And Mr. Cato, your report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This weekend is Memorial Day weekend, a time that we remember those who died in military service to our country. It is a time when we thank the brave members of our military who have given their lives in defense of liberty and freedom that we expect and all enjoy. We must take time to honor them for their sacrifice for something bigger than ourselves. We must honor them for the sacrifice for us and for this nation. And we should not forget the members of our armed forces that are stationed around the globe, the men and women who stand ready to protect us. We send them our thanks, our hopes, and prayers for their safe return. As we look forward to Memorial Day and the beginning of summer, I also want to wish the Board of Directors, our customers, and employees a safe holiday weekend. Mr. Chairman, this month, we have employees that we would like to spotlight, and we have two employees to recognize for their outstanding performance, and Gerald Francis, our Deputy General Manager, will introduce those employees while you and I come to the center and highlight the achievements and the outstanding performance they've given to our customers.
I'd like to invite Mr. Michael Myrick, who is a Metro custodian, to join Mr. Zimmerman and Mr. Cato. In the late evening on Saturday, December 15th, Michael Myrick was on duty at our Chevrolet Metro Rail station when he saw a customer had fallen into the track bed. Mr. Myrick alerted the station manager, ran down the platform, and quickly helped the customer get off the track. In the meantime, the station manager called the medical assistance and the customer was taken to the hospital. This was a job well done, but one thing we really want to note is that Mr. Myrick's attitude toward the action. After everything was done, he continued his shift and didn't even mention this to his supervisor. For him, helping save a life was just what he was supposed to do. Then you go back to the task at hand, and it's nothing worth mentioning. Mr. Myrick, I just want to say that truly we admire your modesty, but we do want to acknowledge you as our employee spotlight. So if you can please join with me in acknowledging Mr. Michael Myrick. Mr. Cato said we have a second employee spotlight, Mr. Walter Brantley. As I say, will you come on down? We're alerted of station manager Bradley's actions in January of this year by a customer's comment card, so I'm just going to read what the comment card said. Today, Walter R. Bradley was a hero. Mr. Bradley was checking the upper level of the Friendship Heights Metro Rail station. As I exited the station, I turned into the sidewalk when a stranger walked up and assaulted me. As I screamed, help, the assailant took off. Mr. Bradley pursued, tackled, captured, and restrained him until the police arrived. Mr. Bradley's brave, quick, heroic action enabled the police to remove the assailant from the streets before he hurt someone else more seriously. Mr. Bradley is an exemplary citizen and Metro employee. He should be honored for risking his own safety to assist a victim. I'm grateful that Metro has Mr. Bradley as a station manager at the Friendship Heights station. I know I will recover from this attack more fully and quickly and regain my comfort level taking the subway because he is checking the safety of the station below and above ground. We at Metro completely agree, station manager Bradley's actions were heroic and should be honored, which is why he is our employee spotlight.
I have some more reporting to do, Mr. Chair. Okay. This morning, I am reporting with sadness that announced that Chuck Woodruth, our chief financial officer, will be leaving Metro next month. And I just want to appreciate all the work that Chuck has done in this time here, and I appreciate what he's done since I've arrived at the agency. He's had some difficult tasks, some difficult challenges, but he delivered. And I want to thank Chuck for all the work that he's done and wish him the best of luck in his new position. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I just want to talk about Imagine. Last month, we heard a presentation outlining the future rail capacity and some ideas on how we can expand that capacity. Today, we heard how we can better leverage bus transportation to create growth and to make our bus and rail systems even more customer-focused and meet the needs of this region. There are issues that we must deal with, such as funding. But right now, I'd like to take a moment to focus on the promise that these two presentations hold for us as a region. Let's take a moment to imagine the metro system in 2030. Picture our current rail system. To that, we add the expansion to Dulles. And we integrate the system with the streetcar system in Anacostia, other sections of the district, and the Purple Line. And we integrate that with services plan for Northern Virginia. We're running every other train from Springfield directly to Greenbelt versus via the current Yellow Line bridge. And we have another Potomac crossing between Roslyn and Georgetown. Add to that the impact of Metro Bus, when in the near future we're moving people at speeds comparable to that of Metro Rail over 26 plus priority bus quarters. I ask everyone to keep this vision of the future in mind, because the time to start creating the future is today. Along with this long-range planning, I think we should also take a hard look at what's happening today. The projections we've been given are based upon population and job growth, but they do not factor into the effect of gasoline prices on ridership. I've seen oil executives as early as this morning on the news say that gasoline could hit $5 a gallon or more. I have to say, based upon their comments, I believe them. So if gasoline does hit $5 or even $6, what is the impact to the ridership and the availability of transit within the region? At what point do people walk away from the cost of gasoline, in which we may see a massive move of commuters from driving to public transit because of the cost and the convenience? How many will it take to overload the region's ability to handle them? I've got our planning department working and looking into that now. I think it is time that we begin an energy contingency plan to help us cope with a huge shift to public transportation that could be coming. What would be in this plan? There are a couple of ideas that I think should be included. First, we would need people to spread their commute over a longer period of time. It would make a big difference if the federal government and other employers instituted some form of mandatory flex time. Also, I think that the Department of Transportation and the region should have the authority to declare certain lanes as bus and van pool only lanes in a contingency. This will require us working with this organization, with the DOTs, as well as with rideshare organizations to expand the rideshare program so we can fully leverage our transportation capacity above ground and below it. We're just taking the first steps towards such contingency planning now, and there's a great deal of work that needs to be done. But when we need it, we'll be glad that we made the effort. So, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to notify you and the board and our customers in the region that we have begun this process to put together a plan in place to address any mass movement to mass transit from the use of the private automobile should the cost of gasoline continue to rise. And we will bring that plan back to this board for your review, input, and approval.
You know, I think these are very important remarks that you've made. Much of what you're talking about is long-term vision, which is clearly very important for our planning. But the issue that you're describing could be pressing on us far sooner than the time frame that we've been discussing. And it's one of the things that, we're all being asked about now, and to some degree, it's hard to know what the answer is, in part because we don't know the degree to which we may be confronted with this. If gas prices not only continue to rise, but if there's some kind of interruption and we have even a week that is reminiscent of the 1970s and lines were to appear, for instance, at gas stations again, what would be the impact on all the services we provide? It's not hard to imagine a situation in which we suddenly have more passengers than we can possibly deal with, given that we're in so many cases riding, at capacity and straining capacity now. And there, in a short-run period, there's only so much flexibility. You can't make any of the lines in these maps suddenly appear. And even on bus service, again, where it's somewhat, you know, it can be implemented somewhat more quickly, you still have to have buses. And so I think we need a contingency plan that is short-run, you know, as well as medium-term and a long-term plan. But we also have to be able to kind of assess what realistically we can do in a matter of days, weeks, or even months, and make sure people in the region understand what that is. There are things we can do, and there are things that, you know, given a short amount of time, we may not be able to do.
And that is true, and that's what we're working on, working with our partners in the region to come up with the maximum flexibility possible.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the other issue I'd like to report on is the new charter bus rules that have been issued by the federal government. In 2005, the President signed the Safety Lou Act into law, and that means Safe, Accountable, Flexible, Efficient Transportation Equity Act, a legacy for users, and that's a mouthful. And in short, it authorized the federal surface transportation programs for highways, highway safety and transit through the year 2009. One of the provisions in the act is really discourages public transit agencies from providing charter services in competition with private sector charter companies. And if they did, under the act, they could lose part of their federal funding. Since 2005, the Federal Transit Administration has been developing the rules to enforce this provision. These regulations became final and effective March 1 of this year. This rule quite effectively takes Metro out of the business of providing charter services. In effect, without a waiver from the Federal Transit Administration, Metro could not provide any charter services without first checking with dozens and dozens of charter companies registered to provide the service within this region. In FY 2007, we chartered close to 2,500 buses and earned $1.6 million in providing those services. The price we charged for the service covered all of the direct costs, bus operators, mechanics, as well as the surcharge to cover the overhead costs. However, not providing this service will have little financial impact on Metro, but will have a big impact on the region. The real impact on Metro is that much of our charter services entail running buses from our Metro rail stations to other locations. One example, in FY 2007, Metro chartered more than 1,300 buses to run from FedEx Field to the Morgan Boulevard Metro rail stations for the Redskins. Our concern is that in the future, we will have 1,300 buses that we do not own running through that station. We have no oversight on the charter bus providers, and that raises concern of safety for our operators, employees, and customers. Then, that's the impact. There is an impact on our customers. Without a waiver from the Federal Transit Administration, as I said, we cannot provide services to the Wittrap shuttle. We will not provide the Redskins shuttle. We could not support the Bay Bridge walk the next time it is held. And we will not provide the Andrews Air Force shuttle services. More important than any of those is the fact that we will not be able to provide charter services to schools in the District of Columbia, Maryland, and Virginia. In 2007, we provided more than 600 hours of charter services to our regional schools, allowing students to expand their educational experience. Since the typical school year is 180 days, on average, a Metro bus is providing this valuable service to students in the region every day. With the new rule, these valuable experiences could still be offered to our children, but at far greater cost to the schools. I bring this up to you for information and to entertain your thoughts on the matter. Basically, the rule is in effect. There are waivers, but they're very difficult to achieve. This is something that's not only impacting Metro, but it's impacting transit services around the country. Mr. Chairman, that really concludes my report.
Mr. Gaeta, thank you. You know, some have suggested there's an inverse relationship between the amount of funding in a transportation bill and the number of letters in the acronym to describe it. So one that has, what, 9 letters and a hyphen is probably not going to be your best, if that's true. But on the other hand, all kinds of things can be hidden in a bill that nobody knew about when it went in, and they often turn out to be pernicious. This is, I think, an unfortunate example of what is really a well, I hate to say hypocrisy, but I guess I've said it. You know, government agencies are always told by some folks that they should act more like a business, and they should do things to bring in revenue they can. So you do that, and then, of course, some federal law will come along to tell you you can't do that because there's somebody who wants to make money on the side, and we shouldn't be competing for that business. This agency was created to provide transportation services for the entire region, and this is one of the ways in which WMATA has done that. And you know, people in the region have found it useful, and now we are being prevented from providing those who pay the taxes to provide, to generate the facilities that we have and the buses and so on, from even being able to use them in these ways in times when the capacity is available. I think that is really unfortunate. I'm glad that you're highlighting this because if nothing else, we want those customers in our region who will find that we're not doing some of this and wonder why aren't we doing it, that it isn't because we've chosen not to. But because Congress has decided that we can't. If there's any possibility of getting a waiver, I think that that's certainly something we should seek, but I realize the difficulties there. Perhaps when there's a new transportation bill to supersede Safety Lou, which is going in, which is next year, I hope that it will have fewer letters in its acronym, more money for transportation, and fewer provisions like this one. Any comments? Ms. Hudgens.
I just wanted to also convey that same concern that we have been, I think, blindsided by something that is a critical element to our community. When we look at the number of customers that have become comfortable with the service, as well as the efficiency that it provides in providing transportation to the many, many venues that you mentioned, to have received such a short, I think, explanation as well as notification as to how we were going to get past this is really very short-sighted. And I would hope that we take the time to convey, because I know that we've worked with congressional folks to work on some of these to make sure that they understand and can help us with this, but to convey to our congressional delegations the impact of this, because I think it is a big impact. And while we can look forward to hopefully an improvement in the next legislation, I think it is important that they recognize what their customers may be experiencing as a result of this.
Benjamin.
Last Saturday, my son, my grandson, and I rode two of those buses that went to Andrews Air Force Base. And it's abundantly clear to me that the air show would not have operated had those buses not been available to provide the transportation that was necessary, and that there probably are not 270 buses available with any of the private providers on a day like that in order to provide the kinds of service and the levels of service that we did provide last Saturday. The same can be said about the Redskins, the same can be said about the Bay Bridge Walk, the same can be said about a number of issues, but as you pointed out, most importantly, what's happening for our school children throughout the area. This is an indication of the law of unintended consequences. I'm sure that if you go to the federal government today, they will say, well, of course they could apply for a waiver, but having looked at the charter regs myself, I can see that the probability of getting such a waiver other than through heavy political pressure is highly unlikely. I applaud the action of the general manager and the staff in making clear that this is a case where the heavy hand of the federal government has come down and taken away services that are critical to many important functions to this region.
Mr. Solomon?
Real brief. Even though it may be difficult, you will hopefully look into the waiver. But more importantly for me, in your report, you mentioned the safety concerns about the charter buses running through the Morgan Boulevard station on the Redskins Day. In the event that the agency or the authority doesn't get a waiver, we probably should start looking at some type of safety plan for those buses during the football games, because the football games will go forth, and I suspect that if we don't get a waiver, the charter buses will be coming through, and that's probably a major concern with all that traffic.
We will do that. In fact, as part of our planning, we've made certain assumptions that there would be, whatever the number, charter buses operating in our parking lots and our stations, and we're putting together requirements that they would have to meet in order to do that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That will take us to committee reports, the first being the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee. Mr. Graham.
Thank you very much. We did, at our meeting on May 8, 2008, we discussed operations, crime, and safety. We also listed various items that we want added for the June meeting, and it included recommendations on stations that we ought to consider for exterior cameras. In my committee on the DC Council, we've added $200,000 to the budget for exterior cameras, crime cameras in the District of Columbia, and we want to be advised by Metro as to where they should be placed. We wanted a comparison on the number of auto thefts with the parking capacity at the various stations, and there are other items that we requested. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. Report by the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee, Mr. Benjamin.
At our last meeting, there were two issues that were extremely important and very broad that we did go through. One was the funding strategy for urgent unfunded capital needs, and a cash flow analysis and a timing of projects indicated that out of the total necessary for the urgent unfunded capital needs, about $157 million would have to be spent during the next 2 years, fiscal 09 and 10, which are the last 2 years of Metro Matters, and that staff had identified $109 million of that $157 million that could, in fact, fund those projects due to cash flow on the existing projects. The remaining cash flow, another $48 million, is yet to be determined, but hopefully that will also be available through proper management of the various projects. In reviewing the operating budget, the proposed operating budget for fiscal 09, the committee gave direction to the general manager and to the staff that the fiscal 09 subsidies be capped at the level, jurisdiction by jurisdiction, that had been presented to the committee in March of 2008. And a table to that effect has been provided to the jurisdictions and was reviewed and at that meeting. And the position of the committee was that that table and the individual numbers by jurisdiction should be the upper limit of the subsidies in the FY09 budget. We understand that this creates a major challenge for the general manager and the staff in finding appropriate areas for reductions in order to meet that limit, but we believe that that is an appropriate limit for the 09 budget. As part of that, we also approved and sent to the board the recommendations for Metro Routes 30, 32, 34, 35, and 36, and said that all the costs associated with that, including additional supervisors, should be included within the proposed fiscal 09 budget. So I now move approval of the staff report and recommendations on the proposed restructuring of Metrobus routes 30, 32, 34, 35, 36, which include maintaining local route 32. Hang on for a second. Include local route 32 between Friendship Heights and Southern Avenue stations, and 36 between Friendship Heights and Naylor Road stations, serving all stops and operating 7 days a week. It also means implementing new peak period limited stop services on routes 37, between Friendship Heights and Archives Stations via Massachusetts Avenue and 22nd and 23rd Street, and on Route 39 between Naylor Road and Foggy Bottom GWU stations via Southern Avenue and Pennsylvania Avenues. We will also implement new 7-day-a-week neighborhood connectors on Route 31 between Friendship Heights and Foggy Bottom stations, and on Route M5 between Naylor Road and Eastern Market stations. And we would eliminate Routes 30, 34, and 35. I move approval of this action.
There a second? Second by Mr. Graham. Discussion. Let me ask a question. One of the things that I think had come up before was that this, which is to be implemented in the coming fiscal year, is subject to the approval of the budget we're not yet done with. Is that right?
Yes.
So this is all contingent, of course, on budget approval, and is otherwise consistent with the budget that's moving?
Yes.
Okay. Further discussion?
And may I just comment? And would be incorporated in the totals as we just discussed?
Yes.
Very good. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Next item. Do you have one more?
Mm-hmm. We were also presented a proposal for a DBE goal, disadvantaged business enterprise goal, of 25% for federal fiscal year 2009, and the committee sent to the board the staff request to approve a 45-day public period of public comment on that 25% goal for federal fiscal 2009. Move approval.
Second by Ms. Hewlett. Discussion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Does that conclude your report?
That concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Benjamin. Report by the Planning, Development, and Real Estate Committee, Mrs. Hutchins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the board had an information item. It's the only item that came before the Planning, Development, and Real Estate Committee, and it was the bus priority corridor plan, a multi-year plan to improve bus service throughout our region and to discuss how the board would address policy and implementation of a plan. My only comments would be that we all commented that the staff was passionate, but I think the board members were passionate about the discussion because it is a reflection of, I think, a renewed commitment of bus service in the region and bus service as an integral part of moving people, just as our Metro Rail service has been. The committee will see the plan come forward in subsequent meetings in the year.
Thank you, Mrs. Hutchins. That brings us to administrative actions, of which there are 11. Mr. Benjamin?
I move items 6 through 9 and 11.
Ms. Benjamin moves approval of the recommendations on items 6 through 9 plus 11 on block. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Hewlett.
Mr. Chairman, I have a
question on Ms. Hutchins' question.
A question on 1.
Well, we're going to come back to 1.
We'll
so
one
if, oh, you if, did say 1.
If there are no questions on 6 through 9 and 11, then we'll vote on them on block and then come back to the other items. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. So we've approved 6 through 9 and 11. We're coming back to 1 through 5 plus 10, and I expect we will do them sequentially. Item 1 is the request to approve approval for an initiate and award contract for IT data security assessment plan and phase 1 implementation. Mr. Cato.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and we have a few of these items, and we're bringing them to you one at a time. This is just an approval to enhance the security of our existing system to support a program that will make our system more secure from the standpoint of hackers, particularly the financial system, our rail system. And this is a process that I think is something that we have briefed the board on in closed session. This will provide monies, should the budget be approved, to enact certain activities that will carry through 2 years, FY09 and FY10. And again, this action is contingent on the approval of the FY09 budget as well as the FY10 budget.
Questions from board members? Mr. Benjamin.
I noticed that a new IT security office has been created, and it will be managing these contracts, yet it says that there's no impact on the operating budget. Does that mean that this office is well within the operating budget, and there will be no costs now and in the future for staffing or anything else? And will there be any implications of all of these contracts in terms of additional operating costs?
Well, the actual development of the security system is part of the capital program, and any personnel involved in this will be charged to the capital budget, and that's why we're saying there's not an operating impact. As you get beyond FY10, there are some maintenance of efforts of every system, and as it is installed, those types of efforts we have to look at staffing levels within our existing budgets or other recommendations to you at that time.
I guess the issue that I'm really looking at in this case is when we make a capital investment, one of the issues is there a long-term operating implication of that capital investment? And yes, I understand in the beginning, while you're making the capital investment, there are in fact few, if any, operating impacts. This implies that long-term there are no operating impacts as well, which seems highly unlikely.
I didn't intend for it to intend there were no long-term. There are some operating costs that will be necessary to maintain the system.
I guess what I was hoping was, as we made these statements on the operating budget impact, that's what we would be reflecting. You know, if you buy buses, you have to run them,
yes,
you know, and those kinds of things. And we very often make these investments without realizing that there is an out-year operating impact, and that's what this line was supposed to deal with.
And actually, the line should say no operating impact in FY09 and 10, but as you go further out, you're correct.
And I guess what we'd like to know is what are the nature of those? Also, the budget amount here is $1.9 million. And I assume that is just for these individual contracts. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. I think Ms. Hutchins had
I just had a follow-up question regarding the $1.9 million, and that is, as we are developing our FY09 budget, have we identified the $9.1 million?
Yes, these monies are in the FY09 proposed budget.
Mr. Grant?
Yeah, the question that comes to my mind is, this is a proposal for IT security, right?
Yes.
But what have we been doing heretofore? Is this would suggest there's have we had no effort in terms of our IT security that has involved no budget whatsoever?
Let's see if I can. This will improve the security that we have in place. I do not.
How much are we spending today on IT security without taking into account this particular proposal?
I'm going to ask Ms. Packley to address that question.
We are spending very small amounts. They are for historically a very small staff without an enterprise security view for Metro of all of the kinds of multiple layers of security which are necessary to provide real security to the authority. So historically, we have not had adequate, nor continuing, nor multi-year security initiatives, and that is what we are doing with this.
How much are we spending today? I mean, what is the budget for security? I mean, is it possible to have a discrete amount that you can disclose to us?
It is no more than six individuals, and it is no monies for product at the various level to procure security items.
So you don't know?
I do not know particularly. I know it is very small.
I don't know. Very small here can be a lot of money. But anyway, can you get us that number, Mr. General Manager?
Yes, we can.
The second question I have is I'm puzzled as to why, with the budget coming before us, why are we doing this type of thing piecemeal? Why isn't this being you know, identified as one of the things that we're considering in the FY09 budget?
Paul, it's just, in the past, we have bundled together IT projects. And there were times that the board was not fully aware what those projects were and felt they did not have sufficient information. And if they would have had that information, they might have made a different decision. Or at least they would have been aware of what they approved. And so this year, we wanted to take a different approach. And that is to break out the different projects so the board is aware of what programs we're working on and have some comfort level that the IT projects that they are approving have some specific application and towards some specific objectives. The reason we're bringing these ahead of time is because we need to be able to begin the procurement process to a point, and it helps us to be able to maximize and utilize the people we currently have on staff versus having a delay a month after you approve the 09 budget.
I understand that, but, you know, quite frankly, I would prefer, as part of, I've just gone through the budget process at the council, and with that fresh in my mind, I prefer to see all the enhancements proposed, because this is clearly an enhancement over and above the, quote, very small amount that we're spending this year. I'd rather see all the enhancements be put out so that we, as part of our budget decision-making, we can determine what it is that we consider to be the most important. I mean, this is being considered in isolation, obviously, from other enhancements that we may wish to consider. And so, Mr. Chairman, I prefer to put this off. And any other enhancement off that is now included in the FY09 budget proposal until we can have a look at the whole waterfront of what our options are, because this could be a very tight budget, and I don't want to, my view is that we shouldn't favor one over others in terms of doing this in a piecemeal approach. And I appreciate very much how everybody's anxious to get on with it, and I'm sure this can be very pressing, but there are a lot of priorities that we're anxious to get on with.
If I may, I have with me the entire list and can make it available to you immediately after.
For all possible enhancements,
yes,
in every area of the authority?
Yes. Yeah.
In every area?
Oh, no. I have all of the IT.
No, but that's
yes. Actually, you're saying different things. She has all of the enhancements from an IT perspective and all areas of the authority.
Yes, in all areas of the authority.
I'm talking broader than that.
I think Mr. Graham's point is that he likes to be able to make budget decisions looking at all the budget trade-offs across the agency, not only in this area.
And we're proceeding to this very rapidly. I'm not asking you to hold off on this for months and months and months. I mean, we've got to make these decisions very quickly. But I'd like to see that cafeteria list and figure out how we want to spend these scarce dollars. I mean, that's my view of it.
These particular, if I may, these particular five are all would allow us to continue services that we already have. They are overwhelmingly people services that we have on board, and to do it without service interruption, and to do it so that every one of these is competed. It is a procurement requires that for us to go out and compete contracts that we must have, that we must have MEADs for these contracts. Typically, these contracts are ones for which we already have contracts. We want new contracts, and we want all of those contracts to be competed. And so we need to have an approval in order for procurement to even let us begin to compete those contracts. And we would like to do it so that there's no interruption in service between 08 and 09.
The fact of the matter, if I may, Mr. Chairman, the fact of the matter is we may determine as a board that if we have an extra $1 million, we might want to spend it in some other way. And we foreclose that discussion by this piecemeal approach. And I just think it's, and since we're so near to making those decisions, I don't know why we wouldn't put this off the month that we need.
Mr. Chairman, I think there's ways that we can address the issues that Ms. Peck brought up and also address your issues. And we will bring it back as part of the overall
Let me ask them, Mr. Cato, I mean, this is the first of five items like this, and I suspect some extreme questions might be raised.
It impacts all five of them.
Let me ask you one question, though. Have the details of all of these five items been vetted with the JCC? They receive, you know, full briefing and information about this?
No.
I think that's especially important for an item that involves millions of dollars and is not otherwise in front of the committee, because that's an administrative item. You know, I think that in those situations, it is particularly important that they be vetted with the technical staff from the jurisdictions so that you don't have the situation you have right here. Because normally administrative items are there because they don't warrant, you know, full committee discussion. They're fairly routine and that kind of thing. And I'm wondering whether this really falls into that category. I know Mr. Monomo is waiting to.
Well, I think it's my question's moot, frankly, until we resolve this issue.
So, Mr. Cato, you have a proposal for how we might proceed?
Well, I will bring this back as part of the overall budget presentation in June.
June meeting?
Yes.
And is that items 2, 3, 4, and 5 also?
Yes.
And nothing terrible is going to happen by waiting the extra month.
We won't have a break in service on these contracts.
Yeah, but
sorry?
We will have a break in service on these contracts.
What does that mean?
It means that in 08, all of these items are items that have consultant personnel on them that for us to, and these are contracts that have come to an end, multi-year contracts that have come to an end in the areas that have consultants on them. And we are looking, I want to be sure we compete all of these contracts, that whoever has these contracts doesn't just get them again. For us to be able to compete these contracts, we need to have a signed MEAD for procurement to take these pieces of business out to the street.
Saying there's not going to be enough time between the expiration of the current contracts and all that you have to go through to get the next one up.
That's right.
There will be a delay, and yes.
Well, I mean, but I hate to say that that leads me to ask the question of why you weren't here a month ago. I mean, presumably you knew when the contracts were expiring, and, you know, if we had a month more, then you wouldn't have that answer. So,
but we have the same issue that's been brought up by Mr. Graham, the whole aspect of looking at the budget. We will sit down and look at our abilities to extend contracts or staffing within my authority, but we're bringing this back to you as part of the overall budget next month.
Board's pleasure. Is that acceptable?
That prompts the question, how much is the value of the contract in administrative item number one?
Value of the contract is...
No, of the existing contract.
All of the existing.
Since you tell me that this contract is going to have a period of lapse, what is the amount of the contract?
At $1 million.
$1 billion?
$1 million.
Oh, $1 million. So that's the very small amount that you were talking about? So you want it to go from $1 million to $1.9 million. You want to double the cost of the services rendered.
This first...
Mr. Chairman, actually, I think we need to get more information. I understand what you're asking us. I think we need to be...
Okay, so you're agreed then to bring this back?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Let's
All right. If there's no objection, then we will...
That's fine. I do want to just run through the one issue that I wanted to talk about. Under the urgent and funded section of the fiscal impact, just some clarity about what that budget amount and this action, it appears to be a bit of a discrepancy in what we have budgeted and what the action is looking to move forward.
For number one?
Number one.
There is, do you want me to speak to that now or wait?
No, we're bringing that back.
Back with that information.
Come back.
Mr. Benjamin?
Yeah, and if I may, the concern that I think I hear Mr. Monomy saying is there is some indication here that this is unfunded and therefore won't be done, but it shows as this action, which implies that we're approving it. So it wasn't clear what we were doing. Along that same line, before you come back, I was looking then at actions 2, 3, 4, and 5. And if you'd look for just a second at action number 2 and the budget amount, in this one, the budget amount is $14.5 million, of which this action is $2.5 million. Now, in the previous one, you said, the $1.9 million was for these contracts. Do I therefore assume that $14.5 million is for just this area of contracts?
$14.5 million is the entire proposed capital budget for IT.
Okay,
since I did not know which of the five would be approved, we began with the same base, $14.5 million, for each of these individual actions.
Which would be a very appropriate thing to do, but you didn't do it consistently across all five. They sort of jump back and forth. Sometimes there's $14.5, sometimes there's just the contract. What would be helpful to us as we're approving these is that you use a consistent budget number throughout so that we know what it is that we're doing and which budget number we're working against. I think your statement about the 14.5 is exactly right, but then I question why two of these don't have the 14.5 in and three of them do. And what are we actually approving?
The two that do not are where there is a one-year contract only.
Okay.
We will come back and do this.
All right, then we'll ask that these five items be brought back with the information requested.
Yes.
And you may want to consider whether a fuller discussion in committee might be appropriate before it comes to the board.
I will.
All right. That would leave item number 10, which is a request for approval to change a memorandum of understanding to create a reimbursable project for the installation of fiber optic cable. Mr. Cato?
Yes, I asked Mr. Couch to provide you information on this item.
This basically, the original memo of agreement was to have all this work done by VDOT. They have asked us to do the installation and provide the funding. The other terms that were in the original agreement really remain unchanged.
Questions from board members. Mr. Benjamin.
Similar set of questions, really. If I look at this document, what I see in the BAIS is that this is part of the capital improvement program. Yet, if I look at the resolution, it says this is the reimbursable budget. Not clear to me which one we're approving. Is this a reimbursable project or a capital improvement project?
It's a reimbursable.
Okay, so then you're saying that it was incorrect in the BAIS.
It's a reimbursable.
If it is a reimbursable project, which year's reimbursable project is it?
Current fiscal year, FY08. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I looked in the budget. I couldn't find any of the numbers that you referred to in the budget. The $41,402,000 didn't appear to be in the 08 budget. So I guess the question I have is, if we're going to get this in front of us, can we get it sufficiently complete that we know what it is we're looking at without inconsistencies? And finally, if I look at this one in the BAIS, it says, if the project costs more than $2.5 million, that VDOT will pay any amount above that. If I look at the resolution, it limits the expenditure by this authority to $2.5 million. Do you intend to come back in case the price goes up over $2.5 million, or do you want that authority now and as long as VDOT reimburses us?
Prefer to have the authority now as long as VDOT reimburses us.
I want to think this one through also and bring it back.
If I could clarify the budget part, the $2.5 million wasn't in the budget. That's new money. So what the resolution is saying that there were reimbursables of 41, and if this is added, it would increase the number. So this would be new to the budget. We didn't anticipate
that,
doing
but
that.
But I couldn't find a budget that had $41 million in reimbursables. Now, maybe I just didn't look in the right place, but I looked at your published budget and didn't have that in. So I was trying to figure out which budget we were dealing with.
And I'll have to look and tell you where that is in the budget. But I just want to make sure I understand. What is being asked for here is authority to take $2.5 million from VDOT and do this work.
Okay.
And they're paying the whole price. And if it's anything more, you're going to get more money from them.
Correct.
Right. Except that the resolution doesn't say that.
Do we need some additional language in order to do that? Perhaps Ms. O'Keefe can help us.
Does this need to be done now?
Well, probably.
Well, the resolution is the way it is because I think VDOT gave us a not to exceed 2.5. But certainly if the additional flexibility is sought, we can add an additional resolve that in the event that VDOT provides additional funding, that staff has the authority to continue with the work to the extent that the funding has been provided. It's a little wordy, but if we're going to do it today, we can add an additional involved. Or perhaps a better way would be after the second to the last resolved not to exceed 2.5 million or any additional funds provided by VDOT, and perhaps be a shorter way to do it.
That's fine. You know, and again, since this isn't part of our budget, but somebody else's, and I realize that this is work that probably needs to proceed, that I would be comfortable with that if board members are comfortable moving in on that basis, including that language.
So move it, move it.
All right, so I'll move the resolution with the additional language that Ms. O'Keefe just described. Is there a second? Second by Ms. Hewlett. Further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. The motion carries. Thank you. That concludes administrative items. Jurisdictional reports. D.C., Mr. Graham.
Thank you very much. I just want to say why I was unable to be at what apparently was a very good conversation this morning on buses. I was attending the topping off ceremony for the Park Place condominiums at Georgia Avenue and New Hampshire. And this 130-unit development with 40% affordable plus retail is being built and is well into being finished on land that was owned by Metro WMATA. And while this was not, strictly speaking, a joint development project, it was a sale of the land to the District of Columbia, which has really made a very substantial difference in terms of the revitalization of Georgia Avenue. And it's another example, and I just want to say, Mr. Chairman, that I don't think, I think Metro WMATA could do a little bit better job of really taking credit for some magnificent joint development initiatives and other land dispositions such as this, which have really contributed to quality of life and to an enhancement of quality of life. And I can speak to those firsthand that I know in the District of Columbia, most particularly in Ward 1, where we're almost finished with all of that. And I think we could do a better job, Mr. Cato, of telling the story of Metro WMATA and in terms of all of what's happened, you know, the retail center in Columbia Heights, the revitalization of U Street, and now this major improvements and enhancement and revitalization on Georgia Avenue is in very substantial part a direct result of the subway system being in place and then working to develop land around it. And so it was a very nice ceremony. Our mayor was there and various other dignitaries and of course Metro WMATA was acknowledged for the role that it played in the sale of the land to the District of Columbia that made all this happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. Let's see, Maryland, Mr. Benjamin.
No report.
Virginia, Ms. Hudgens.
No reports.
All right. That will take us to closed session. We will reconvene after closed session for action on any matters that may arise from the session and to certify the closed session. I move that the board meet in executive session to discuss contractual issues with respect to Kemper Lumberman's Insurance Company, consistent with Board Procedure Roman Numeral 6D, and legal issues with respect to Monument versus WMATA, consistent with Board Procedure Roman Numeral 6B. Seconded by Ms. Hewlett. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
No? The ayes have it. We are in closed session. Thank you.